A game developed with malware released for free on Steam and infected over 1,000 gamers. Plus, the creators of E3 are back with a new trade show and don't want you interested in it. Tonight is February 16th, 2025, and the Bobby Blackwell Show, featuring your calls and chat comments, is up next. So you would say, even if... Okay, I'll let you go. You talk. Wow, what happened to your voice? Thank you, Skype. So video games, that's what the show is about.
This is Edwin Akeripe from Sweden.
And what's with all the Halo hate, Bobby? You've been hating on Halo a lot lately.
I just don't like shooters. I'm not saying it's a bad game, I just don't like it. Billy O'Kay says he can't be seen in public playing games that aren't hardcore. What would people say? And what up, G and Chad is once again talking about wrestling. That's why. It's not because they hate the fans. It's more because they have to start from scratch.
Hogwash later.
From a little room in Atlanta, Georgia, Bobby Blackwolf.
That's right, I'm back. So excited to be back. It's been a while. Hello, everybody. Welcome to I'm back edition. Not the 50th anniversary, but rather the... we're getting close to the 20th anniversary of... The Bobby Blackwell Show, where we discuss the current news affecting the video game industry, as well as sometimes reminisce about gaming's history. My name is Bobby Blackwell. If you're joining us live here on this Sunday night, welcome. Thank you so much for being here. We do try to tape this show live just about each and every Sunday night. Obviously, not last week, but just about each and every Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, over at the Voice of Geeks Network Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VogNetwork. Come join us, interact with the show directly, and I'll be trying to read intelligent comments from chat throughout the night. But... this is a podcast. Not everybody can be here on Sunday nights. There are sometimes other things on TV. I know another show turns 50 tonight. So they're having their big 50th anniversary special going on right now, which I am not watching. Obviously, I'm going to be here at VOG. But if you do watch it, that is totally fine. That's why we are a podcast. So you can also join our Discord server during the week to talk back at the show, vognetwork.com/Discord. That is where you'll see things like MameFam in the last episode told us about Arcade Time Capsule, a VR thing. And I said, the Discord invite is gone. It expired. So he put a new one in there. So if you want to join the Discord for that VR arcade, you can find that in our Discord server over at vognetwork.com/discord. But let's go ahead, because I've got three stories that I want to cover. One of them is actually something that came out last week, where that's the middle story. We'll get to that in a second. But let's go ahead and start talking about some of the stuff that happened in the past 2 weeks that I wanted to bring up. This first one, I want to bring it up not because any of you probably downloaded this game, and probably not because not many of you have purchased this game. Well, it was free. But this is not the type of thing that I don't think any of you would do. But it is something to know about downloading content from Steam from a publisher you don't recognize. PC Magazine reports that a hacker published a PC game on Steam to infect users with Windows-based malware. So if you have a Steam Deck, you're fine. The free-to-play game PirateFi was released this past Thursday. Days later, Valve was spotted sending out a message to affected users, warning them about the threat to their computers. Steam said, quote, "We strongly encourage you to run a full system scan using an antivirus product that you trust or use regularly and inspect your system for unexpected or newly installed software," unquote. PirateFi was published as a beta, but according to Steam forum posts, one user noticed something was off when their antivirus software prevented them from running the game, flagging it as carrying a Trojan called Lazy.gen. They say, quote, "The essence of the virus, when you launch the game, the virus unpacks into your app data folder and looks like Howard.exe. Unquote. And then basically it tries to steal browser cookies, enabling the malware's creator to hijack access to various online accounts. So basically, by doing that, by taking your cookies, stealing your cookies that you worked hard for, they don't need your password. They don't need your two-factor authentication. They're like, no, this is me. This is my authentication token. It's still valid. Let me into the account. Another gamer who downloaded the title said, quote, "Most of my stuff has either been hacked and passwords changed or being signed in using cookies that have been stolen," unquote. Valve did not respond to a request for comment at the time. So it is unclear how the malicious game ended up on the Steam store. However, the company's message urges users to reinstall their Windows OS to ensure the infection is fully removed. According to SteamDB's estimate, the game may have circulated to over 800 users. So the game was called PirateFi. It was by a developer that had nothing else ever on Steam. This was the only game that they have ever published. As I'm sure you're aware, all you need is $100 to publish a game on Steam. That's how much it costs now to because Steam doesn't have the resources to vet every game publisher anymore. So now if you give them $100, you can publish on Steam. And it's a survival game. It's like Rust. It's like Ark. It was a game like that, and it was put up for free. It was a free beta. So, hey, free game. Who doesn't like free games, right? So about 800 to 1,000 people downloaded it, and they were immediately infected with this malware that was stealing all their logins, basically anything that they had cached that was a login to a site, because obviously you don't want to log in every single time you open up your browser. They were getting it from that. Now, the question here is, what type of scans does Valve do? Because I know they do something. I know that you can't just upload something on Steam and have it go out immediately. Like, there is stuff that's going on. And if antivirus software are already picking up on things, then why isn't Valve at least doing the bare minimum of running an antivirus check on any build that gets uploaded to Steam? Why is that not a thing? Because, unfortunately, there are people that don't like having the antivirus on their machine. So, you know, obviously, Valve would say, well, it's not our... You know, if antivirus is catching it, it's not our problem. You know, users should be running antivirus. But not everyone does. Because some people will think, oh, you know, the antivirus is stealing my data and sending it over to Norton. And I don't want Norton having access to my computer and scanning my files. And, you know, there are people that are paranoid like that. Or they turn it off because it slows things down. Because sometimes antivirus can slow things down. Sometimes it can even cause performance issues, as Tiger Claw says in our chat room. There are some times that antivirus stops you from doing things as efficiently as you can. So if you want to run the most efficient computer, you turn off the antivirus, you turn off all the malware checks, and you just hope that everybody else has done their due diligence for you. You hope that everybody else has vaccinated their stuff so it doesn't affect you because you did not vaccinate your PC against this type of threat. I am not making any parallels to anything going on in the real world with that. But I do feel that it should be that Valve should at the very least run an antivirus scan for the Windows builds just to make sure that they can't be held liable, because I don't know. Can Valve be held liable because they distributed this product? Because if antivirus is catching it, why isn't Valve catching it? So I don't think anybody here downloaded PirateFi in the, you know, 3 days that it was available. If you did, you've already gotten a message from Valve and you've probably already had passwords changed. But Valve actually is like, yeah, you probably just need to reformat and reinstall Windows and start fresh. That's how bad this is. Like, you can't just get rid of this. And even then, the damage is done because they've already gotten all your cookies. They've taken all your cookies and they've eaten them. Now, Tiger Claw says the ultimate antivirus should be you. If you're someone who is tech savvy enough and fully aware of viruses and malware out there, you know not to install anything that is suspicious. Unfortunately, not all people are computer savvy. And here's where I'm going to kind of push back on that just a tiny bit, because I agree with the sentiment. But if something is on Steam, I do not consider it suspicious. At least I didn't until now, because I made an assumption, which makes an ass out of you and Umption. Umption really hates it when you do it. That if it got through Valve, it's not suspicious. It's not like these people downloaded it from like a sketchy website or they got it from G2A or anything like that. They downloaded it from Steam, using the official Steam client with an official Steam store page, with an official Steam everything. And so that is how I would be like, oh, well, it's on Steam, so it's safe. Now I know that's not the case. But other people are like, it's on Steam. I shouldn't need an antivirus. I mean, I downloaded it off of Steam. If it had a virus on it, it wouldn't be on Steam, would it? Well, now we learned. Possibly. It could. So, and also remember that a lot of people that are probably playing those type of games and would want that free game are probably younger individuals that aren't tech savvy. Because I will say that one thing that we have noticed is that there is, like, older individuals, like, older than me, they are not very tech savvy. But also the younger individuals are also not tech savvy because most of their tech that they grew up with was a phone that had a screen and they tapped on the screen. There's a lot less of younger people who actually understand how computers work, and they don't need to know how computers work because we have made it so you don't need to know how the computer works to be able to use it. And even then, if they're used to tablets and phones, they're probably not buying on Steam anyway, but they're so used to tablets and phones, that's why they're like, I don't like using the computer as much because I don't understand it. I just want to open the app and go. This is a shot in the across the bow of Steam being a trustworthy platform, which a lot of people thought it was. Now, you know, you talk to people 20 years ago and Steam itself was the malware. Steam was the one that was like, everybody's like, why do I have to have Steam to play Counter-Strike or I think it was Half-Life 2. You needed Steam to play Half-Life 2, and everybody's like, why must Steam install this malware on my system? But for a long time, it's been, you know, everybody considers it a very trustworthy platform. And unfortunately, the necessity of not vetting everybody that posts a game on Steam, this type of things now falls through the cracks. But this is easily something that could have been caught if Valve just ran a simple antivirus on the Windows build. You don't even need any of that crap, you know, AI to do it. It's just run antivirus on it. Just have that be part of the check. And I am surprised that is not part of the check, because Windows antivirus caught this. People who run Windows antivirus and have that turned on, it caught this and didn't let them open the program. And Tireclaw says that they will probably have AI that will detect viruses and malware and remove them, but then somebody will figure out how to trick the AI. They don't need AI to be able to do that. You just run the antivirus. You just run the antivirus on what they uploaded, and that's all you do. That's all you do. So for the people that came in late here on the live stream, welcome. Thank you so much for being here. The game was called PirateFi. PirateFi, one word. I can't remember the name of the developer it was by because it's the only thing they ever made. It was a free beta. It's a survival game. It's a lot like Ark or Rust or something like that. And it was uploaded for free to Steam, I believe, like two Thursdays ago. So this is like 2 weeks ago. On Thursday, Steam removed it Sunday, but already like 1,000 downloads had, and I think 1,000 people had tried to open the game during those 3 days. So Steam didn't catch it until people started reporting, hey, there's malware in this. And Steam's like, oh, well, let's take it down now. And then they sent out a message to everybody who they had known had opened the game through Steam and said, you need to do some checks and you probably just need to reformat and reinstall Windows from scratch. That's probably what you're going to have to do. So hopefully you did not download PirateFi, the free beta of a survival game. And Sean322 asks, was the game good though? I actually don't think anybody was able to play it because nobody's actually talked about the game itself. But I bet it was one of those, like, you could get to the main menu and then, like, nothing else was really done. But by then, just by being to the main menu, the malware got installed on your system and it started running, and they, you know, it was sending your cookies and stuff, all your current browser data to their servers, and then they were logging into your accounts and changing your password and taking over everything. So let's talk about this. This also happened 2 weeks ago. This news came out 2 weeks ago. I would have talked about it last week because I have a different take on this than a lot of other people that talked about this. And I unfortunately did not get to listen to Orange Lounge Radio from last week. They probably covered this and I have no clue what they said. So we'll see how alike we are on this. But Game Developer reports that the Entertainment Software Association, the organizer of the once revered but now dead E3 showcase, is returning to the event fold with the Interactive Innovation Conference, or IICon. Now, I have no clue how they're actually going to say it, but it is all lowercase, IICon. The Interactive Innovation Conference. E2Con. I2Con. I don't know. The conference is being pitched as an essential convening for change makers across industries, but will seemingly focus on those careening through the world of video games. It will take place at the Fontainebleau Resort in Las Vegas from April 27th to April 30th, 2026. So this is next year. This is like in 14 months. A number of high-profile companies from the game industry have already confirmed their attendance, including Amazon Games, Disney, Electronic Arts, Epic Games, Microsoft, Nintendo of America, Sony Interactive Entertainment, Square Enix, Take-Two Interactive, Ubisoft, and Warner Brothers Games. The ESA claims IICon will unite a broad spectrum of sectors that converge with interactive entertainment. ESA President and CEO Stanley Pierre Lewis says, quote, "For decades, video games have been at the forefront of technological and cultural innovation. With IICon, however, it said, we are creating a space for visionaries across industries to come together, connect, and reimagine what's possible through interactive entertainment," unquote. So, what is this? They are doing everything they can to make sure that you, listening to this podcast, and even me on this podcast, are not interested. Which is exactly what they need to do. What this is going to have, it's going to have keynotes and seminars and networking events for the industry. Every industry, every major industry out there has an event like this, usually every year, which is closed to the public. It's just for people working in the industry to learn from each other, network with each other, and work together. And you can't do that as easily online yet. I understand things exist to allow for this to happen online. It's not the same. It is absolutely not the same. If you've been in trade shows before and then you went to the virtual trade shows that happened a couple years ago, it wasn't the same and you couldn't get as much done. It wasn't as beneficial to take the time to attend an online trade show as it is to attend one in person. So Mike Def asked, basically like GDC, yes, except this focus is for the publishers. So Game Developer Conference is like this for game developers, for the people that are, you know, actually developing the games. This is the publisher version because that's what the Entertainment Software Association, that's who they represent, are the publishers of games, not the developers of games. So you got GDC, which the public still has an interest in, much to GDC's chagrin. And then you're going to have this for the publishers. And they are going to do, hopefully they're going to do everything they can to make this so not attractive for influencers, which sadly, as much as I hate the term, I know I am one of them, and for consumers, because the video game industry was the only industry that had an industry trade show that the consumers demanded access to. And the consumers got into the trade show, and that's when some publishers moved out of the trade show because they didn't want to interact with the public. They have PAX if they want to do that. They have all these other public-facing shows that they can do that stuff. They didn't want to do it at the industry trade show. And that is why companies started pulling out of E3, is because it was way too attractive for the consumers and for the influencers, because the consumers like, well, we're the most important part of the industry. We should be there. And no other industry has this problem where consumers are demanding access to the industry-only trade show. It was just the video game industry, and that's because E3 did this to themselves. They made it so it was like the Super Bowl of video games. It was the destination. You had media covering it like it's the big event. It is the world's largest arcade on free play back in the early 2000s. And people would be like, that is my dream. I'm going to go to E3 one day. I will tell you that PAX is what people who never went to E3 thought E3 was like. It's PAX. You want to go to PAX. And because people who went to PAX said, this must be what E3 is like. I like this. Now, then they went to E3 and they're like, where's my 24/7 LAN area? Why does this shut down at 5 o'clock? Like E3 only ran from like 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. and then they kicked you out and there was nothing. And people are like, where's the gaming? Where's the free play? Where's all this? Because that's what they thought E3 was. So ICON, which is what I'm going to call it, even though it's iICON, whatever. ICON is basically taking away the element that intrigued the media and intrigued the consumers. They're taking all that away because even some of the other articles that were made by journalists were like, yeah, they're bringing it back and replacing it with a lot of buzzwords. What a buzzkill. This sucks. We, you know, blah, blah, blah. And good. Because I think that there should be a place where the people who publish video games should be able to get together, have keynotes, and have all the things that every other industry in America gets. They should be allowed to have it too. Because most of E3... was actually in meeting rooms. It was actually in keynote speeches. There were panels and seminars and workshops and all of that stuff. Most consumers are like, no, it's all about the show floor. Well, they're getting rid of the show floor. Like the show floor is not going to exist. It's going to be every other part of E3 that wasn't the show floor. And I think as much as, you know, the ESA is still, I'm not too happy with them and some of the things that they lobby for and some of the other things they do. But in terms of a replacement for E3, for the industry, this is the right step. Let Jeff Keighley do the flashy consumer-facing stuff. Let PAX do the consumer-focused show that was like what everybody imagines the E3 of the 2000s was. Let them do that and let the serious business people who probably are still wearing suits or at least, you know, coats and you know, nice formal wear or not nice business formal wear, let them do their business like they used to. And the reason they stopped going to E3 is because all these kids in cosplay were between them and their next meeting. And for everybody that's like, yeah, I'm really not interested in this. This sounds boring. Good. It's not for you. Questbrush says, it's funny that it sounds like they've gone full circle back to their CES roots, which is the Consumer Electronics Show, which, by the way, is not open to consumers. It's about consumer electronics, not consumers seeing the electronics. Questbrush says, because E3 grew out from CES, where the games had to leave the corner they were stuffed into as the industry just kept growing. Yeah, they actually had like a tent outside. Like they weren't even in the show floor. They were like in a tent in a parking lot, and that's where all the video game stuff was. In 1994 is when they was their last year at CES, and then E3 showed up in 1995. So Mike Dev says, Bobby is like that CDI image of Zelda saying, good. Good. That is me, yes. So I'm actually hoping that this does exactly what the industry needs it to do and what the industry wants it to do. I hope I am not interested in attending. I hope that they do not give anything that I would want to attend. That would be fantastic. And I say that as somebody who went to just about every E3. I was at the majority of E3s, either as somebody in the industry before I started doing podcasts, and then I was media for a long time. Until they stopped accepting us as media. But I want this to be so boring, I don't care about it. Let's make it happen. So the last story that I want to talk about is this one was posted in our Discord. And this is basically me just ragging on another Bobby. A Bobby who's no longer in the industry, but he probably will be giving a keynote or something at iICON. He's one of the people that would be doing that. Bobby Kotick, who is thankfully not currently in the gaming industry, I don't believe. But he still talks. Because, you know what? As much as I don't want to hear about it, and I don't want to hear him, he has a right to talk, and there's a lot of things that he knows that in knowledge he can impart to other people to maybe not make the same mistakes he did. So, Video Games Chronicle reports that former Activision CEO Bobby Kotick has said that the company's decision to acquire British Project Gotham Racing studio Bizarre Creations was a bad one. The acclaimed Liverpool-based studio, which was closed in 2011, was best known for its racing games. After developing the first two Formula One games on the PlayStation 1, it went on to create Colt's classic Metropolis Street Racer on the Dreamcast, which was notable for its realistic recreations of real-world cities. This would evolve into Project Gotham Racing series, which was exclusive to Xbox and lasted for four games until Activision bought the studio in 2007 for a deal initially worth $67.4 million, followed by a further $40 million if it hit certain goals within 5 years. However, following the buyout, Bizarre wouldn't even go on to last 5 years, with Activision announcing in 2010 that it was closing the studio down. Its only games that released as an Activision studio were Geometry Wars, Retro Evolve 2, James Bond, 007, Bloodstone, and Blur. In a newly recorded interview with venture capital firm Kleiner Perkins, Kotick appeared to cite the acquisition of Bizarre Creations as an example of a bad decision that had been made but was unable to name the studio, its location, or its leader. After Kleiner Perkins advisor and former EA COO Bing Gordon asked Kotick what his trick was for always making good acquisitions, he replied that they weren't always positive in his opinion. He said, quote, "We actually had a bad acquisition. The company that was in Manchester that did the driving game for Xbox, and it was called, unquote. Although Kotick wasn't able to name the studio and got its location wrong, given that Activision didn't acquire any other UK-based racing developers, it's clear he was referring to Bizarre Creations. He said, quote, "They had a good guy who was running the day-to-day," which apparently is studio head Brian Woodhouse, apparently, saying he negotiated and delivered the acquisition to Activision of Bizarre Creations on his LinkedIn page. Kotick described him as, quote, "a brilliant guy, like a McKinsey guy. He went straight into planning," unquote, which is like it's this strategic planning CEO bullcrap as the McKinsey 7-5 model, whatever. He said, quote, "It was $80 million and we wrote it off 2 years later. Everything about it violated all our principles. The guy was an expensive lesson," unquote. So I read this and I celebrated this by getting Blur, pulling Blur out, putting it in my Xbox 360 and playing it a little bit, which everything still worked. My Xbox 360 still worked. The disc still worked. I was able to play it. It was a wonderful game. Oh, also, what was a wonderful game, by the way, Project Gotham Racing, which I have Project Gotham Racing 3 right here. I think I have Project Gotham Racing 4 as well back there, but this was the easiest box to get from my stuff of 360 games here. Wonderful game series. Loved what Bizarre Creations did. And PodCulture says, "I wish it was at least backwards compatible on Xbox Series X." I do too, because that's why I had to play it on my Xbox 360. It was interesting booting up my Xbox 360 for the first time in a long time. I had to log back in, which, by the way, if you do need to log back into your Xbox 360, Microsoft has changed how that works, but they haven't changed on the Xbox 360. You need to go into your Microsoft account because you cannot do two-factor authentication on the Xbox 360. It just does not work. And you have to go into your Microsoft account on your computer and create what's called an app password. And then this is a password it shows you once. You never get to see it again. And it's like a string of letters, actually. And that is the password you put on your Xbox 360. You can only use that password once on that one device. And then you can log into your Xbox Live account. And then the dashboard looks all weird because I hadn't booted it up since they closed the Xbox 360 store. So, like, all the store tiles are gone and everything else is kind of stretched out to kind of fill the empty space. It's because they didn't actually update the Xbox 360 dashboard to remove the store. It just doesn't show up. So it's kind of weird in that. But then I did, you know, but you can still see, like, your friends and you can even see, like, activity feed of, like, what people, you know, what achievements they got on their Xbox Series X games. Can't click on it, can't do anything with it, but they're there. And then I opened up the game. It did download a 4-meg update, so the update server still works, because I had not actually played Blur on this Xbox 360. I did download the save from the save games. And then it's actually kind of neat. What Blur does is, it like, it, at the beginning, it's like, previously on Blur. And it's like, you did this, and it was a multiplayer race, was like one of the last things that I did. And it was like, you're this far in your multiplayer career, and here you're this far towards this achievement, and here's where you are in your single-player career. And it's done like that. So the servers are down. You can't play multiplayer. The leaderboards are up. However, I don't actually think you can change the leaderboards, because I did race a track that I didn't reset my save or anything, but I went back to like some early levels, and I actually got a higher amount of fans on a track than I had before, and the leaderboard did not update. So I believe the leaderboards are in read-only mode from whenever they shut down the servers. Dark Tatsuya says, more games definitely need it. Here's where you left off, especially RPGs. That's one of the things I remember Final Fantasy XIII did, I believe, is when you loaded up your save of Final Fantasy XIII, it kind of gave you a little text roll of where you are and what's happened, like where you are in the story, just so you remember. S. Jared Matt says, it's a shame that Bizarre Creations was bought by them. Anyone else might have supported them and not Zoslov them. Yeah, it's like, I get it. Like, they were known for their racing games, and then they basically put them in charge of, and well, also Bizarre Creations had made Geometry Wars like that. And that was like the, oh my God, this is Xbox Live Arcade. Like, Bizarre Creations kind of defined the Xbox and the Xbox 360, which is why Activision wanted to buy them. And then nobody cared about Geometry Wars 2, really. It did go multi-platform. I think I have it for the Wii is where I bought that one. And then they did Blur, which was overshadowed by Split Second, because Blur released at the same time. And then they had made a shooty game, because that's what the James Bond game was a first-person shooter or a third-person shooter, which is not their wheelhouse, and so of course it's not going to do well. Mike Dev says, I seriously want Microsoft to give either of the Forza teams the Blur franchise and let them go wild with it. I would love that. It was fun. I got to play some single player. I am not as good as I was in 2010 when I last played the game, because that's when my achievements were. I am definitely not as good as I was then at it. I remember it was a lot more fun multiplayer because it was a lot more. It seemed like a very balanced in multiplayer, and you had realistic cars. So you were playing Mario Kart with real cars. Like, I had a Ford Mustang, and, you know, or you can get a Dodge Charger, and they had the full damage modeling and all that stuff. And it was, I really enjoyed it. And a lot of the stuff that Bizarre Creations did in Project Gotham Racing, I really enjoyed as well. So Bizarre Creations was a great studio, and it's kind of interesting that Bobby Kotick, when asked, and I know some people are like, you know, why is he talking about this? Because people are inviting him on and asking him questions, and he's answering them. If he's being asked a question and he answers it, I'm not upset at him for answering it. You can be upset at the people who are bringing him on to ask him the questions, but I'm not going to be upset at somebody for answering a question when invited on a podcast. I will never be upset at that. I will be upset if I don't want him to have that platform. That's on the podcast who invited him, not on him. So I played Blur. I miss Blur. It is delisted everywhere. It had a PC release. It's been delisted a long time ago because they had realistic cars. So those car licenses, unfortunately, are timed, because Dodge is not going to let you have the license for their car in perpetuity. They're going to want updates every year. They're going to want more money every year, which is why it was fine in the digital games, because it was just, you can't sell it anymore. So in physical games, that's fine, because they probably only did a couple pressings. Then they're like, yeah, we're not selling it anymore. It's not for sale. Now it's just on the used market, which is fine. But when you're in digital, it's all new copies. You don't get the used copies. So I believe there are, like, if you really want to go to some of those shady websites that would have PirateFi on it, they're probably keys, unredeemed keys on Steam that you could still redeem for Blur. But there's no online servers. The multiplayer game is gone. And that's, I think, why it's not backwards compatible, is because the multiplayer is not there. The servers are down. The leaderboards, I believe, are in read-only. I probably have to boot it up again to see if it updated my score. But, yeah, it's they're not running the servers, so there's no need for it to be backwards compatible, unfortunately. Maybe someday I would stream this. I also didn't realize how loud the Xbox 360 was. It's been so long since I turned it on, and it's in my office. Like, it's over to my right is that wall where this picture was that I took. That's like, if I look directly to my right, that's what I see. And that thing is loud. Like, the Xbox 360 is a jet engine. And I don't know if it's just because it's old and, you know, or whatever, that it's louder than I remember it. I do have one of the original Xbox 360s. I don't have the Xbox 360S and the refreshes and all that stuff that did a lot of this. This is like one of the OGs. It's loud. It was kind of loud. But maybe I'll stream it sometime, and this microphone won't pick it up, and I'll have headphones on, so I won't hear it being a jet engine. But we can reminisce about some Blur single player and maybe me being really bad at it, I guess. It was a lot of fun, though. Questor says, yes, that sounds like my PS3. It sounds like a jet engine as well. I at least now have the PS3 Slim, which is not as much of a jet engine, but I'm sad about it because the reason I have a PS3 Slim is because I had the fat PS3 that had the backwards compatibility, the hardware backwards compatibility with the PS2, and that got struck by lightning. And you can't get those PS3s anymore. They are very hard to find. You can find all the other variations of PS3. They're, you know, cheap and easy and all that stuff. But finding one that of the OGs that has the hardware, that basically has the Emotion Engine chip in it for hardware PS2 backwards compatibility, those are pretty rare at this point. So, speaking of something that's going to make a lot of noise, music, we are going to take a very quick music break here on the live stream, and then we'll be back to talk more about some of this stuff. And Pop Culture says, I lucked into one at a pawn shop. Ooh, lucky, lucky person. You're participating with the Bobby Blackwell Show and the Voice of Geeks Network at twitch.tv/VogNetwork.
Hey, this is Randy Varnell with Gearbox Software, and I'm happy to endorse my friend Bobby Blackwood and his little podcast thing. Hey, this is Randy Varnell with the Gearbox Software, happy to endorse my friend Bobby Blackwell and his little podcast thing. Hey, this is Randy Varnell with Gearbox Software, happy to be here with my friend Bobby Blackwolf to talk about his little podcast thing.
I know, I played that bumper recently, but I have new reason to play it now. And that's because I was very shocked and surprised when I was watching the Sony State of Play this week. And when they were about to show Borderlands 4, there were two Randys. There's the Randy Pitchford, the Randy that you've heard of at Gearbox Software, and this other Randy that you probably hadn't heard of unless you listen to this show, Randy Varnell, who was my old guild leader in EverQuest back in like 1999 when I was playing EverQuest. 1999 and 2000, before he got into the game industry, he was my guild leader in EverQuest. And he was even my guild leader in some other games. We did Anarchy Online after EverQuest, and then we tried to do our EverQuest 2 for a little bit. We did Star Wars Galaxies. So, and this was before the Great Reset, like during the beginning of Star Wars Galaxy. And he was my guild leader. And now he is apparently the chief creative officer at Gearbox Software. He's worked at Gearbox for like 15 years. That was from 2012. Basically, Gearbox, him and another designer of Borderlands 2 went to Dragon Con instead of PAX that year. The rest of the Gearbox team went up to PAX West. He and they came out to Dragon Con, and I was like, hey, we met for the first time. Like, I actually walked up to him after a panel. I'm like, you know, and I started, you know, talking about guild stuff, and we hung out, and he, this was back in 2012, and him and his designer talked to Gearbox PR and agreed to do a podcast interview with me, and that's when they also recorded those bumpers. So, yeah, so it was kind of wild to see my old EverQuest guild leader on the Sony State of Play. And I guarantee you he is a now he's probably on good terms with Randy, and he doesn't listen to this show, so thankfully for that. But of the two, Randy, he is the better Randy of the two of those that showed up in that little in the bumpers between the Borderlands 4 segment on Sony State of Play. I promise you he is a better Randy than Randy Pitchford. He's a really good guy, and I haven't actually spoken to him since 2012, but you know, I'm sure he's still a wonderful dude, and congrats to him on getting on the big stage. If you want to leave a bumper, you do not need to be, you know, foresee that in 15 years you're going to be the chief creative officer at a major game publisher. All you got to do is contact me with something with just your voice. I will choose the DMCA violation behind it. Either a video or just audio, because we are an audio podcast about coming back to the Bobby Blackwell Show, and then I'm not playing the same things over and over from 2012. I would have, before I saw the Sony State of Play, I'm like, oh, I'll just play the Christopher Tin, because Christopher Tin was on my podcast after he won his Grammy, because Civilization came out. And I'm like, no, I got to put Randy in there, because have I bought Civilization 7? No, I have not. And we'll probably talk to Rob about that in just a little bit. We do have just a tiny bit of time, just in case, if somebody wants to jump in on the green room and talk about anything over on the Voice Geeks Network Discord server, vognetwork.com/Discord. You can do that, and we can talk about something going on in the gaming industry. I do try, like, I have a little spot here to take calls, and I don't. But it's been a part of the show for a long time, and we're still set up to do it. So... So Civilization 7, I was excited for Civilization 7. And then I watched some of the early professional reviewers, which obviously you need to kind of balance that with actual real people reviews from people you trust. But the early professional reviews, I'm like, do I want to spend $70 on this today? Because it's a lot like the previous Civs, that they weren't that great on launch, and it was only later on that they became really great games. And then I looked, and I'm like, well, Civ 6, I looked at my Steam playtime, and I've literally logged only like 12.6 hours total in Civilization 6. And I'm like, am I going to spend... And I have all the DLC, by the way. I think the DLC like went on like this amazing sale at some point. And I bought all the DLC and I did not launch the game after buying the DLC, because Steam tells you when you last launched the game, and then it tells you when you acquired the DLC. And it does not look like that I launched the game after buying all that DLC. I'm like, oh, I'm going to do that later. PodCoach says, that's like a single session for you, isn't it? No. Two sessions. I had two sessions in Civ 6. So I think a single session for me is like 6 hours, which is why I don't open it up, because I'm like, I don't have 6 hours straight to play this game. So I kind of said, I'm not going to buy Civ 7 now. I'm going to let other people, kind of hammer at it and wait for a DLC or two, and then get like an Ultimate Edition later. And instead, what I really need to do is just go play the current version of Civ 6, the finished version of Civ 6. Because I did buy that on launch day. I bought the DLC at some point, not on launch. So at least that was on sale at the time. But I did buy Civ 6 on launch at full price. I probably should play it before jumping into Civ 7. A lot of people are saying that right now Civ 6 is the better game. Really, a lot of people are like Civ 4 is the last good Civ game. And, you know, whatever. You know, Civ 5 and 6 have their great things. I mean... Civilization Revolution was my favorite, but that's neither here or there. And as far as I can tell, nobody that I know has bought Civ 7 yet. But I know that people are playing it, because it's on console as well. The Switch reviews have been kind of interesting, seeing how all that's working. Fifth Dream says, wait, finished version of a game? What? Okay, so here's the thing. When I say finished, I mean they're done with it. They're not making any more updates. They made updates to Civ 6 up until this past year. I believe, like, the last new leader or whatever was added in, like, last year or the year before. And Civ 6, I believe, came out in, what, 2016? Something like that? So yeah, and even SJ Matt says Civ 6 is good now, and I'm like, I enjoyed the 12 hours I played of it. I just didn't have another 6 hours to devote to it. And then Questbuster says, I did hear that Civ 7 is having some teething issues, so waiting does sound like a good strategy. So yeah, so I'm going to wait a little bit, wait for it to kind of drop in price a little bit, or maybe wait for an Ultimate Edition that has all the DLC at the time. Then maybe we'll do some Civ 7 stuff. But like, I have Civ 6 that I really haven't delved into, and I probably really should do that because I already have it. So I already have it. It's installed. I have all the DLC. I have all of their apparent, like, I've got every DLC that's available apparently. So I have like all the additional leaders and all that stuff. And that's really where I should be spending my time on Civ. So coming up next here on the Voice of Geeks Network at twitch.tv/VogNetwork is Orange Lounge Radio. It's three people out in Sacramento, California. They talk about games for much, much longer than I do. And we like to check in with them to see what they're talking about. I haven't talked to them in like 2 weeks. It's been a while since I've talked to them. So we like to kind of check in, see what's going on, and see what they're going to be talking about. And this is me vamping because Discord is being Discord. So yes, Dark Sakura, I did eye roll a little bit, so I'm gonna read what Dark Sakura said. Does teething issues mean it bites? Yeah, no. There we go. So yes, apparently Civ 7 bites right now. So let's try this. Sacramento, are you there?
I am here, Bobby. Sorry about that. How are you?
I am doing well. So Civilization 7, I was just kind of talking about. I know you were also excited for it, but that was before. Last time I talked to you was before the professional reviewers got their thoughts out. And then, you know, obviously waiting for more non-professional reviewers, what they think. Have you picked it up?
No. And that might surprise people. I'm a pretty big Civ fan, but yeah. I think the timing is a little weird right now for me. And I think I'm feeling a little put off by these games that are coming out with obvious spots for DLC that end up being a part of the complete experience, especially with a game like Civilization. Like, and what I mean by that is that by the time this DLC comes out, it's going to be expected that you really have it to be able to play the complete game. I feel the same way about Mortal Kombat. It's where I'm at with that series. So I'm kind of getting to this point where I'm like, I would rather just wait for the full Game of the Year edition to come out that's going to have everything with it during this game's long life cycle. And as much as I love Civ and I do want to support the developers, I have to draw a line somewhere with my support for these games. You know, will I probably crack in a few weeks down the line where there's a sale or something? I might. I'm not going to say I'm going to hold the line forever.
Yeah.
But Civ 7 does have this, you know, for me personally, sort of unique situation where I'm about to go out of town for a significant amount of time. Yep. I had a lot going on this weekend. Like, I wouldn't have had a lot of time to play it anyway. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm kind of considering, like, before I drop $70 on a game these days, I need to make sure I have the time to invest in it.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah, that's kind of where I'm at with Civ 7 right now. It's kind of a bummer, but so is the whole mandatory DLC that I'm feeling.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, when I looked at it, like, you probably played Civ 6 more than I did, but I was kind of surprised that I only had like 12.5 hours total playtime of Civ 6 on my Steam. I'm like, you know what? I should invest time there.
Because
I do have all the DLC. So I've got the full experience there.
Yeah.
And I don't think I've ever played a game with all the DLC on.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. No, go for that. Absolutely. Or Civ 5 even is still something you can buy today.
And I have Civ 5. And I think
for like $10.
And I think I have all the DLC for Civ 5 as well. It's just not installed on my PC right now.
Yeah.
So, you know, but I do actually, I think I've got like 50 hours in Civ 5. So I at least played more than two games in Civ 5. But Civ 6, I did not really invest that much time in. So, I was like, you know what? That's what I'm going to do, and I'm going to save my money for right now.
And I think, you know, a lot of games are competing for time right now, and as well as the backlog. So I feel like I'll revisit Civ 7 when it's a complete experience.
I revisited No Man's Sky by the way.
Oh, really?
And I want to share this with people because this is something that perturbed me, not about the current update of the game or anything, because like it was, you know, it was a lot of fun. It's actually the first time I've played since they did the station update. It's the first time I played since they added a lot of like the combat difficulty, all the custom settings and all that stuff.
Yeah, I've done a lot. Yeah.
So I go in and I'm enjoying it, and I finally get to the space anomaly, right?
Okay.
And so in No Man's Sky, the space anomaly is the multiplayer hub, but it's also where you can pick up all of your rewards from previous playings of the game from other things. And I go in because I had some Twitch drops and stuff, and so yeah, I got those. And then I go in and I'm like, well, let me get my expedition rewards, of which I had zero. Now, the PlayStation is where I did my expeditions. I know because I have the PS5 video, because I did complete the Mass Effect expedition that gives you that on the freighter stuff. Not there. Not unlocked.
Weird. So they're just not unlocking for whatever reason.
So here's why. This apparently happened 4 updates ago to people on PlayStation. Where one of the updates, I think 4 updates ago, borked the save file for your expeditions. Because it turns out that expeditions and your expedition rewards are only saved locally to your save file.
Oh, wow.
The Twitch rewards are on your account, but then also saved locally to your save file, but it can resync. On PC, the way they got around this is that you just hack your save file to give you all of the rewards. So you can actually edit your save file to give yourself every expedition reward and every Twitch drop.
Of course, modder's going to mod, hacker's going to hack, right? Yeah.
But you can't do that on PlayStation.
Right. Well, what you can do, although it's limited, so if you're not in it now, which is also frustrating, but No Man's Sky added cross save recently. Yes.
And I think that's what caused this issue. Because I enabled that. I'm like, oh, let me turn that on.
Yeah.
But I'm not.
If you haven't actually used it, you're not. Yeah, it'll zonk you and say you're not in the beta and we ran out of space, which is also silly.
I am right now not in, like, I've signed up for it, but they're like, yeah, we don't have space for you.
Because that was my big idea on how to get my rewards off my Xbox was, oh, I'll just open the save on PC or Xbox, get all my expedition rewards, and then push it back to PlayStation.
Yeah.
But no dice.
No. So
that's annoying.
Yeah. So I don't have my expedition rewards. I have the Twitch drops, but I don't have the expedition rewards. So, but it's thankfully in my case, I didn't really do many. The only expedition I completed was the Mass Effect one, because it only took 2 hours.
Yeah, that was a really short one. And that is a good reward. I'm not gonna lie. Yeah.
I really enjoy. And my save file from that expedition is still there. I can go into it. And I have the reward, but I can't, like, it's still not in the Quicksilver thing.
Oh, strange.
So, like, it's the Quicksilver part. Like, so it didn't take it away from the games where I had used the reward, but I can't redeem it anymore.
Once that cross save opens up, you're going to have to, like, open that save on Xbox then open your other save.
I wonder if they're probably going to do something that won't let you transfer that. I don't know. Because, like, obviously, Hello Games does know that there's this GitHub repo that has a save editor for PC. Like, obviously, they know that's there, and they're not going to stop you from using it, but they can do things to stop you from using it on other platforms.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I was kind of bummed about that, but I still enjoyed playing it and, you know, going back through things and, you know, seeing what's changed. I did not do the expedition yet, but I did just, you know, kind of go through, like, the beginning motions again, you know, which I've done like 80 million times.
It's still a great game and satisfying game to me. But obviously, yeah, with every new feature comes a new bug. And that's a real bummer because it's a heck of a bug.
Yeah.
Sorry to hear it.
So what are you going to be talking about on Orange Lounge Radio tonight?
Well, Sony, speaking of which, had a big state of play and talked about some updates to games and announced a few new things as well. So we'll dig in on that. Not to be left out of the conversation. You know, it's funny you were talking about Bobby Kotick being on podcasts. Phil Spencer has been kind of all over in the media lately, too, doing a series of different interviews. And he's made a lot of interesting comments about the future of Xbox. So we'll talk about that as well. And some interesting, classic 80s arcade game getting rebooted. So we'll talk about that as well.
All right. Orange Lounge Radio is up next. Thanks so much, Rob.
Thanks as always, Bobby. See you in 3 weeks.
Yep. See you then. So, that is it for me. I will be back next Sunday night. I know it's going to be 3 weeks for him, but I'm going to be back next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, right here on the Voice Geeks Network Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VogNetwork. Come join us and interact with the show directly. You can also find us on our Discord server, vognetwork.com/discord. And you can also find me on Blue Sky at BobbyBlackWolf.com, as well as at VogNetwork.com is the station's account that lets you know when we are live here on Twitch. Hey, if you like the show, tell a friend. If you hate the show, tell an enemy. I don't care. Just tell someone. The show is not for everybody. But it may be for somebody who does not know about it yet, but we would not be able to make this show work without the help of people who go above and beyond. A lot of people went above and beyond last week when I was not here. Thank you so much for that. But tonight, Sean322 resubscribed for the 27th time to the Twitch channel. Thank you so much for that and all your support every week, because I know Sean322, we say his name a lot at the end of the show here. And we did get a new follow tonight. Thank you so much for the follow. That's it for me. I'm going to hit the button and hit us out of here. I will see you all next week. And maybe I'll play some more Blur this week in memory of Blur, which was great. You can find it. Go play it. Bye.
A winner is you. The views and opinions expressed are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and are not necessarily the opinions of
the VOG Network, people who need to hire new voiceover guys,
or your mom, although if Bobby said it, it really should be. This has been a production of Bobby Black Wolf Studios.